My name is Manuel Vanderpool, and this is at Blackie Days 2023. Can you please tell me your name and how you spell it?
Richard Cornett, RichardCornett.
How old are you?
I'm 81 right now.
What year was you born?
I was born in 1941, two months after Pearl Harbor was bombed, before Pearl Harbor was bombed.
So how did you find yourself in Carcassonne, Kentucky?
Well, I just applied. Somebody had asked me, I didn't have a degree, and somebody had asked me to apply for an emergency teacher certificate. So I did, and it just turned out that Carcassonne needed a teacher, so I came in.
Do you remember what age you started teaching at Carcassonne?
Let's see, that was about 1964. So I would have been 23 years old.
And how many years total did you teach there at Carcassonne?
I taught 3 years, full terms.
So consecutive years?
Yeah, 64, 65, 66.
Do you remember, as far as the classes then, what grades those were for the school?
They were 1 through 6.
So all 3 years was 1 through,
yeah.
1 through 6?
1 through 6, grade 1 through 6.
As far as the class sizes, do you remember maybe how many students you may have had on average?
I think there were somewhere around 18 to 20 total, 1 through 6 grades. Yeah,
that's a good class size considering the size of the building, you
yeah.
know, and,
oh, yeah.
and the classroom size.
Yeah.
What kind of subjects did you teach there at Carcassonne?
Well, I think they were pretty much basic. Of course, you know, the first and second and third grade, they didn't have things like history, geography, things like that, but they all had health.
Okay.
Reading, spelling.
The foundational type classes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were just the basic knowledge that you need to live.
So prior to applying at Carcassonne, were you from the area here, or did you come to Carcassonne for that teaching degree? Or
no, I was raised in Blackie, and I started out at Lee's College in the fall of 1959. And then I transferred to University of Kentucky and Cumberland College. Still didn't have a degree. I was teaching in the fall and going to school in the summer to support my certificate, my teaching certificate.
So working while you were trying to obtain
yeah.
that.
Yeah. yeah, they called it an emergency certificate, and I had to pick up 12 hours a year in order to renew that certificate.
Now we consider things, you know, with technology and you know, the public road systems that we have now and things, that it would have been a little more difficult trying to both go to college there at Lee's or UK and trying to maintain, you know, a job in uh-huh. such a diverse area.
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, I had to cross two mountains to get to the school. I had to cross the mountain at Elk Creek and then go up Bull Creek Mountain
yep.
up to the top of the hill where the Carcassonne School is.
Now, it's
and
blacktop
now.
And
I bought a few sets of chains.
That's
cleats.
It's blacktop now, but even in the gravel, you know, it's always been a big incline to traverse across.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard any bad stories with trying to get over there? Maybe somebody wrecking or anything, or
yeah.
maybe getting trapped over there.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Having to stay in the classroom.
Well, to be honest with you, I did have to let the school out at certain times because of the snow. It's snowing, and I'm over there on top of that mountain, and I would have to get out there and put the chains on my car to get back over to Blackie. So I would let the kids out a few minutes early, give me time to put the chains on my car so I could get back out of there. But it was rough. It was rough.
Do you have any fond memories that you may think about or things that you like to reminisce on?
Well, it was a great bunch of kids. I loved the kids over there. And, it was a big experience for me just being with the kids. I always have liked the kids. And I started out when I started teaching school at Cal Branch with 40 first and second graders. But it was a good experience over there. All kids have something to contribute. And I always had it, kept it in mind that kids are not bad. They just haven't been taught. And I don't think I ever came across one that I called a bad child.
One of the things I see about the people and the kids here are their willingness to learn anything, to try anything, and really the motivation to be self-sufficient, you know, to not really, you know, try to put boundaries on themselves. They're willing to do anything. I think that's kind of the grit of the people, is
and
that
you
resiliency.
Have to pick up on that. You have to pick up each child. I've always considered each child is different, and you know that has just continued through life. Everybody's different. You know, you've heard that a woman's work is never done. I've heard that old saying, you know, work is never done because they go from rising to setting sun. Well, I can say that about teachers because many times I've laid in bed and wondered what I can do to get this one to learn. This one may have learned one way, but this one's not getting it, so I have to find another way. Like, you know, I think I told you about the maps. I went to the service stations, every service station in this area I could find. They used to give maps free. These kids really took an interest in where they were in this world. And I bought a globe, put it in the classroom, and those kids went crazy over that globe.
You know, tucked away on a mountaintop, sometimes you don't really understand the scope of where you're at in the world, or true, what kind of impact you have.
Their world is only what they can see. The Board of Education to get books for these kids, and I had a hard time getting new books. They had new books and had already given them out. And I went up to the Board of Education to get new books, and they were going to dinner. And I said, well, just give me the key. I know what I need. And I just had a small car at the time, and I loaded that car down. I told them, these people over there, parents, they've paid for these books. They pay school taxes, and these kids deserve it as much as anybody in the consolidated school. So I loaded this car down. Now, they didn't care much for that, but I brought them over. Now, the old books, I asked them, well, what should I do with the old books? And they said, burn them. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I thought, these books people can learn out of. So I told the kids, I said, take these. If you see a book you want, take it home, and I don't ever want to see it back here again at this school. And my reasoning was, the parents can look at these books and learn, you know, especially like in geography and history. I mean, and you can't throw away stuff like that. To try to go through, and I counted them myself, 58 books in one day is impossible. With six grades, you've got like 58 books to go. There's no time because you've got individual kids you've got to work with. So naturally, I combined health classes, like first, second, and third. All had a health class together. Fourth, fifth, and sixth, we had history class together. We had geography class together and health together, you know. But I had to combine those. I mean, there's no other way.
The school times, were they still around eight-hour days during that time? So it was a full 8-hour learning period.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a lot of book learning, trying to compile into, you know, and really make sure they get it, too.
Then when you get home, you got papers to grade. You've got the records to keep as far as the lunches and the extra milk that they had in back then.
Yep.
And there's a lot to it. There's more to it than people realize. But I love the experience. I really do, over there especially.
So after you left Carcassonne there, where did you find yourself after the 3 years you talked
about? Well, like I said, I was working in the fall, one school in the summer to renew, and the work I was doing was teaching, but I had to pick up 12 hours a year to renew that certificate. So I'm in school all the time. You know, I'm teaching and then going to school. And it was just an ongoing thing. Well, after I taught 3 years, and I applied for the school again, and John Hendrickson, he had a degree, and I didn't have my degree yet. So he got to school. I tried a couple of times to get them to talk to him. They did. They talked to him. The superintendent talked to him, but he didn't want to change.
So there was only one teacher at that time when you were teaching? Who was the principal during that time?
One teacher.
Was there an on-site principal that may have... It was just the teacher?
The teacher was there in one room.
And you're just pretty much the warden of the... Overseer, of the whole class.
Overseer of the whole thing. We had the little lunchroom that some of the women in the community came and cooked for the kids, you know, day.
True to that same, I guess, towards the end of the school, you know, in the early 70s, it really lost the school aspect when everything went to Stuart Robinson, and then there was a lot of consolidation and things. Yeah. So we're trying to remain true at the center to that while still keeping the square dance and stuff going. Yeah. But, you know, these stories really help to tell things that, you know, my generation or even the next generation just are not aware of, you know, that mm-hmm. we don't know that story. So
Well, now when I didn't get to school, I went, I had to have a good job. I had to do something to make more money to go to school. I was trying to get my degree. So I went to Dayton, Ohio, and got a job just as soon as I got there. And I remember the first paycheck I got working in a factory was three times what I had been making teaching school. So that looked pretty good, but it wasn't my career hope. So I figured, though, if I make quite a bit of money, I can save more money. So I stayed. And there was my mistake. I didn't go back. But I did go on to school to get into another field, and I worked at the Air Force Base up there. And then that's where I retired from, was the Air Force Base.
So, how long have you been retired now?
It was 2011, 12 years.
And you still live in Ohio?
Yeah. I still live right there where I was.
Yeah, I think this area lost a lot of people due to the lack of industry and the, you know, I don't want to say the progressiveness of the rest of the country, but we just, you know, we've been behind time and we've lost a lot of population, even now, since the loss of coal, the coal industry and things. We're seeing a tremendous reduction of population year over year.
I can understand.
And Ohio, Michigan really seem to be the areas that most of the people in the 60s, 70s, and, you know, all the way up till the maybe early 90s were leaving this area to go to seek those steel jobs, industry jobs, you know, foundry.
You couldn't blame them.
No. I mean, there's... You've got to support your family and yourself, and...
I think if I could have gone ahead and gotten my degree at Hope, I would rather, despite the more money, I would rather have been here teaching than working somewhere else in another state. This is my home, and these are my people. And, just like the song that Will wrote about Blackie, you remember, that he'd been wanting to get back, and then the song Detroit City.
I think that really told the story of the people, you know, having from somebody from the area and really been able to feel that heart sick in the music, you know.
Well, now I live on the south side of Dayton, and I tell people I live on the south side because it's closer to Kentucky.
it's the water barrier, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing. If you go, I don't think I've not ever been to some place that I have not found or met someone that was either from this area or had family from this area.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, I always seem to find that one person in the crowd, you know, that's linked to Blackie somehow.
Now you've got your square dances, okay?
Yep.
On Saturday night, is it?
Yep. It's the second Saturday of every month.
Well, I go to four different bluegrass music shows a week up in Dayton, and every one of them, the bands are from this area. Yes.
Do you mind telling? Do you know the band names or?
No, I can't remember the band name because they're all mixed. They come in, you know, different groups and.
I'll have to check into that, and that'd be awesome to see.
Well, some of them have wanted to come down here for Blackie Days, and they remember, who was our banjo player?
Oh, Lee.
Lee Sexton. Yep. He's a relative of mine, yes. And they knew him, and they some of them had told me they had always wanted to come down and like on Blackie days and just do a performance with the other bands.
I think that's something we can definitely make happen.